Oh, man. Oh, man. Okay. So let's start today with a crass intro to the subject of our show.
Let's set the tone.
All right. Yeah, agreed. So once upon a time, there's this guy who urinates on a Secret Service man who is shielding this guy from public view.
Go on.
The Secret Service man is horrified because, you know, he's in the Secret Service and therefore going to go out on a limb and say he's not used to people peeing on him. The person, the subject of today's podcast, when he sees this shocked expression of horror on this guy's face, he only says, "That's all right, son. It's my prerogative."
It's my prerogative.
Hello, everybody. Thank you for tuning in. My name is Ben.
My name is Noel, and the shoe pisser in question is none other than Lyndon Baines Johnson, the 36th president of these fair United States and notorious shoe peer.
Yes. Out of all the presidents, he is the most notorious when it comes to the high crime of shoe peeing, or at least the eccentric behavior. This is the president who took the oath of office on November 22nd, 1963, almost immediately following the assassination of President Kennedy.
It's true. And on that day, when he assumed his new job as president and took residence in the White House, he immediately set to overhauling the telephone system in the White House in a very, very big and, dare we say, ridiculous way.
Oh, we dare. We do dare, my friend, because this was just baffling. So the first thing he did was that he had phones installed everywhere, beneath dining tables, coffee tables, end tables, in bathrooms, on windowsills. And you can find in the oral history for the LBJ Presidential Library by James Jones the argument that the president led the construction of a wired mobile phone network using phones as call relay points, just so wherever he went in the building, he would never have to get off the phone unless he wanted to.
Yeah, he was a notorious multitasker. He would often take several calls at the same time. I'm trying to picture that. It's like, did he have handlers that would pass him the phone and then say, "Excuse me, the president needs a minute," and then he would get another one, and then he would have another one passed back to him? I'm confused. We do, however, know that he was a big fan of the power move, and he apparently liked to use the phone as a tool. It was even said as a weapon, because he could bully people very easily on the phone. Like, he was so comfortable with it that he had it down pat and could essentially get people to do what he wanted by speaking to them in a certain way. And the beauty of this is you don't have to depend on our word for this, because he also recorded like every conversation that he had, which I think there are 9,000 tapes around that you can actually get your hands on. And he had them transcribed. And in his evening reading materials for the day, his handlers would slip him these transcripts so he could go over the day's business. And it wasn't all pure paranoia, right, Ben? I mean, it was to kind of show that he had gotten things done, but also he could call people out on things, couldn't he?
Right. Yeah. And he used this method often. If there was someone in the press that he felt had misquoted him in an interview, he would go back and check the transcripts. If there were another member of Congress or another politician who was waffling or backing away from something they had agreed to on the interview, Johnson had no compunction whatsoever about going public with it. But there's another thing you can find here. 9,000 tapes. That's a lot of tape. He would signal to his secretary with like a little wave of his hand, his finger in a let's roll circle, to turn on the recorders, but his staff sometimes forgot to turn them off. So you can also hear him having these very strange, mundane conversations. There's one where he's trying to get a guy to come cut his hair for free as the president. And actually, can we play a clip of this, Casey?
Can I talk to you now without getting in the paper and getting it advertised?
I give you my solemn word as a gentleman.
I'm a poor man. I don't make much money, but I got a wife and a couple of daughters and four or five people that run around with me, and I like the way you make them look. This is your country, and I want to see what you want to do about it.
When do you want me to come?
Well, it depends first on how much it'll cost me.
Okay. So, a notorious multitasker, shoe peer, and cheapskate.
Well, he liked a deal, but it's interesting to us in a time when phones were a known thing, but they weren't as ubiquitous as they are today. It's strange to us that his mission was to make every place where he spent any sustained amount of time essentially one big telephone office. And this didn't stop at the White House, did it?
No, he was a native Texan, as you could probably hear from his drawl. But he had a ranch house, like a really sweet, sprawling ranch house in Austin, Texas. Yeah, so on this property, he had a giant oak tree wired with a telephone jack and a 35-foot cord. And that wasn't it. I mean, he had I think he was probably the first president or maybe human that had a phone installed next to a hammock. So, you know, he was getting his R&R. But if an important call came down, he was going to take it.
And you have to wonder, was he a hammock swinger or was he just laying there? Because you'd wonder about the cord. He also had at least 15 local and long distance lines at this ranch, which became known as the Texas White House. Did we mention that part yet?
No.
Oh, yeah, the Texas White House. And he had 72 handsets. Here's one that I thought of when we earlier mentioned his notorious multitasking.
Mm-hmm.
One of these handsets was built to handle 24 calls at once, and it's a single handset. So was this conference calling? Was he switching back and forth? Was it just a cool gadget that he felt a man of his station deserved?
Well, he certainly was an innovator, at least in unreasonable requests that led to technological advancements. Because before we had anything approaching cellular phone service, he had phone operators go with him on Air Force One so that he could stay in contact with the Texas switchboard. And just to give you a sense of his daily telephone call workload, it's estimated that he took somewhere in the neighborhood of between 40 and 100 calls a day, and that includes like ones that he took at the same time. Again, I'm picturing him with one phone on one ear and one on the other, like a cartoonish, absurd thing. I don't know. But it didn't stop on the phone. He was a maximizer. He liked to make the most of every single second, and he did not like to stop talking. There are tales, in addition to urinating on Secret Servicemen, where he would force people to follow him into the bathroom while he dropped trow and or a deuce.
Mm-hmm.
And continued talking to this reporter and or head of state even, right?
Yeah, the Johnson treatment. He would get in people's faces as well. He would follow them into the bathroom and harangue them while they were peeing. But Noel, you're absolutely right. He was also fond of making people follow him into the bathroom and lecturing them, continuing his lecture, rather, while he was using the restroom. And if he were defecating, he would just leave the door open so he could still stare at them. That's that was just cartoonish. What kind of like Austin Powers, Mike Myers sort of joke is that, you know?
I don't know, it's a little creepy, if you ask me.
And he was, you know, very much a creep and a philanderer. He also, you can find snippets of him when he didn't think he was being recorded, talking about stuff like this on the phone. He was notorious for cheating on his wife, Lady Bird, as she was popularly called. And we came to find that his staff was also involved in this because, again, he's always wired, right? He's always about building these contraptions, these phone networks. He built something else.
You talking about the buzzer?
Oh, yeah. You know the one. What's happening with the buzzer? What's the buzz about the buzzer, Noel?
Yeah, so it's, you know, it was a button that he had his staff install in the Oval Office so that his handlers and Secret Service protectors could give it a good buzz. It would be connected to his office if his wife was sighted, because he was notorious for hiring pretty young things to work in and around him in his office. And, you know, more than a few rumors about him possibly getting a little attention on the side when old Lady Bird was not around.
Right, right.
So, you know, buzz, buzz, buzz. We know Lady Bird's been sighted. You know, pants on, I guess.
Which fits, unfortunately, with his character. While we're doing the crass Johnson facts, we should admit that he was probably I don't want to say he was the most likely out of all presidents, but he's definitely in the top five presidents most likely to send someone a dick pic because he was fond of showing both men and women his genitals.
His Johnson?
He named it also, he apparently named it Jumbo.
Okay.
Yeah.
So at least by his own admission, a well-endowed fellow.
I just, why would this guy be allowed in public restrooms?
Why would he be allowed in public? He seems like a nightmare. And speaking of pants.
Yes, yes, yes.
I'd love to hear another clip. This one is a conversation between President Johnson and his tailor, where he describes to him, the tailor, some particulars about the measurements for these custom slacks. He needs some extra room in certain areas, shall we say.
Mr. Hager?
Yes, it's Joe Hager.
Joe, is your father the one that makes clothes?
Yes, sir. We're all together.
You all made me some real lightweight slacks. Now, I need about 6 pairs for summer wear.
Yes, sir.
I want them 1/2 inch larger in the waist than they were before, except I want 2 or 3 inches of stuff left back in there so I can take them up. I vary 10 or 15 pounds a month. So leave me at least 2.5-3 inches in the back where I can let them out or take them up. Yeah. Now, another thing, the crotch down where your nuts hang is always a little too tight. So when you make them up, give me 1 inch that I can let out there because they cut me. They're just like riding a wire fence. These are almost the best that I've had anywhere in the United States. But when I gain a little weight, they cut me under there. You never do have much margin there. Let's see if you can't leave me about an inch from where the zipper ends, round under my, back to my bunghole.
All right, then.
So I can let it out there if I need to.
Ah, yes, the old Johnson bunghole.
Yes, it's true. That is indeed the 36th president of these fine United States.
Hey, you know, with what we've got going on today, it's not too far off, right?
Oh, my gosh. What if Johnson had Twitter?
Whew, can't imagine. My favorite part is where he says, you know, down where the nuts hang.
And he does have a compelling accent. He was known as a gifted vocal communicator, despite the aggression. It's interesting because he came from a poverty-stricken community and grew up impoverished.
Sure.
With an oral storytelling background, and he always knew that he wanted to be a politician, right? Because after they lost the family farm, his father became a politician instead, but he never lost this focus, the central focus on the power of communication. And although he recorded so much of his phone correspondence, he still adhered to rules once articulated by Earl Long, who was Louisiana's 3-time governor. And it reads the following. Don't write anything you can phone. Don't phone anything you can talk face to face. Don't talk anything you can smile. Don't smile anything you can wink. Don't wink anything you can nod. So because of his reliance on the telephone, despite the energy he put into, having face-to-face communication over written correspondence, these recordings become better sources than documents for tracing what he actually did. And you can see sort of the edges of the unrecorded conversations he had.
Oh, yeah.
Where he was dragging people into the bathroom.
Oh, no, it's a highly, highly teachable moment of being really able to see the way a very powerful man like this actually conducted business. Because apparently, in a lot of his public addresses, he was a lot more stiff and more formal. And, you know, we're dinging this guy for a lot of things that are very dingworthy.
Rightly so.
Rightly so. But, you know, he also had some problematic policies. He wasn't just, you know, not the best president because of, you know, his tendencies to flash and urinate on people. He also had some real problematic attitudes towards, the U.S. involvement in Vietnam. Isn't that right, Ben?
Yeah, it's commonly seen by historians as a huge misstep for his administration, perhaps indeed the chief misstep, and that would be the escalation of the war in Vietnam. You can read an article about this on CNN called How LBJ Wrecked His Presidency. That should just give you a taste of where people are coming from here, by Julian Zelizer. I love that name. Those are two Z's.
Very strong name.
Zelizer. It's interesting because, again, in these recordings, we find that offstage, when he wasn't grandstanding to the public, he was conflicted, and deeply so, about what the hell they should do. He calls it a mess. He can't see a way out of it.
Sure. And the guy was not without his strong points. He did sign the Civil Rights Act of 1964, mm-hmm. which was the U.S. labor law that outlawed discrimination based on religion, sexual orientation, origin of birth, or race. So, you know, that's a pretty big step. So got to give credit where credit is due, I guess. And you do hear some of his more tender side, I guess, in some of these phone calls as well.
Sure.
He obviously was a very big caricature of a personality. But in this call, where he's talking to Jacqueline Kennedy after the assassination of John F. Kennedy, he's very kind to her.
In other words, the government would be represented by Bobby and Teddy and Chief Justice and Rust. They're going to be over there anyway. The ones to go with you would be whoever you want to take in your own party. And if you'd like to do that, you just let me know and I'll have it all set up for you, and it'll be at your disposal whenever you want it, for whatever time you want it.
Hey, so nice, but that's wasting taxpayers' money.
No, no, it's not at all. It's very important to us and very important to the country, and you let me know how you feel after you have a chance to think about it.
Oh, listen, I just don't know what to say.
You don't say anything.
That's the nicest thing I ever heard of.
And additionally, under his administration, he passed one of the most important and influential acts in recent history, and that is the Voting Rights Act in 1965. We have a clip there as well.
There is no constitutional issue here. The command of the Constitution is plain. There is no moral issue. It is wrong, deadly wrong, to deny any of your fellow Americans the right to vote in this country.
And there you're kind of getting that slightly more stilted, speechy, written part of his personality. Mm. And it's really interesting to have the opportunity to kind of weigh those two sides with these candid recordings of his phone calls versus his public persona. Because as far as we know, other than Nixon, and I don't think anyone's getting their hands on those tapes anytime soon. Not a lot of presidents did this, and they certainly are not accessible to the public in this way. So good on Johnson.
I do want to say there's a great quotation by Nixon, which reads, "People said my language was bad, but Jesus, you should have heard LBJ."
There you go.
So I hope you like that bootleg Nixon.
Oh, that was good. You had the mumble. Just right, Ben.
For some reason, when you're doing that, it reminds me of the old school Tim Curry Pennywise.
Yeah.
When he's scaring the kids.
Do you have Prince Albert in a can? He's kind of Nixon-y.
Oh, the flashback. Yeah.
Wow.
Now, there's another thing that you and I talked about off air that I've always seen as a very clear indication of Johnson's character, and that's his favorite car prank.
This is a good one. There's a fantastic article from our buddies over at Mental Floss called LBJ, the President Who Marked His Territory. I think we know what that refers to. But yeah, he would do this thing where he would take visitors to his Texas ranch for a little car ride, and he'd drive them down a big old hill towards a lake and act like he was losing control of the car and yell, "The brakes are out! We're going in! We're going in!" And then what happened?
And then they would indeed hit the water, and they would float, and he would continue steering the vehicle because, you see, it was not an ordinary car. It was a type of amphibious vehicle called an amphipicar.
And it was apparently the only one manufactured for civilian use ever. And it's funny, I actually, a couple weekends ago, I went with my daughter to a place here around Atlanta called Stone Mountain, and they have this thing called Ride the Ducks, where you get to take a ride in this thing called a duck boat. And it looks like a van, but it's like a boat, and you ride it just like this. You literally, he does the same thing, even the driver, his name was Professor Hollywood, and he was wearing these real kooky star glasses and telling us all these great tales about movies that were shot around Stone Mountain and stuff. And about the time he and a group of school kids encountered Dwayne the Rock Johnson, who came out of his, hey, a different Johnson. But yeah, he hauls ass for this lake and you just go right in, make a big old splash. And then before you know it, you're floating along, you know, the lazy river. Pretty cool. But we knew it was coming though. So not mean spirited in the way that Johnson was.
Hollywood didn't pull a fast one on you?
Professor Hollywood.
He didn't go to Hollywood Academy for nothing.
Hollywood University.
Yes, they're in Hollywood, California, or one of the many other towns in the United States named Hollywood.
Indeed.
So we're giving a brief overview of a contradictory character, and it's clear that his administration enacted some incredibly profound, important, and beneficial legislation for the American public, but also it's clear that most historians agree there were numerous missteps along the way, both in his political and in his private life. One thing that we found interesting here is that a lot of people don't talk about the emphasis he had on technology as an early adopter. I mean, what he was doing really was a pioneering work.
For sure. Like I said, all based on some sort of outlandish requests. But what is technology if not trying to fill a need that may seem outlandish at the time, but will ultimately become the law of the land when people realize, you know, how could we ever have done without this, you know? I mean, not to say that I have 50 telephones installed in my house, but, you know, the fact that you can be untethered. He was essentially trying to create the circumstances that we have with a cell phone, but with the limitations of being wired in. Mm-hmm. He wanted to never be any less than arm's reach away from a phone. And it makes me think of our old office bin in Buckhead. It used to be the former headquarters of LaFace Records.
True story.
Which you know about Babyface, more known as a producer and songwriter for like Madonna and stuff. I think he had a couple hits on his own.
Oh, yeah.
But there was this weird bathroom. I'll let you tell it, Ben. It's your story. But there's this weird bathroom that always kind of struck us a little odd, right?
Yes. So in the old office that our company used to dwell in had a strange executive suite all its own. A little bit less than half of the entire office space was taken up by what we believe was Babyface's office himself, and it had an executive washroom. This washroom had a very, very low commode that was directly opposite a full-length wall mirror. So that it was unavoidable to, if you were sitting on the commode, it was unavoidable to not see yourself. And directly to the right of this commode, if you picture yourself sitting here, again, very low to the ground, there was a red telephone, a red landline telephone.
Like Batman style? Like would it glow, do you think?
You know.
I hope so.
It rang once and I never answered it.
No way.
Yeah, I was outside of the restroom. I didn't like to hang out in there. It was kind of creepy.
Are you messing with me?
No, it rang.
Damn.
So we have to wonder who has the phone number to the LaFace bathroom.
Let us know. You can write to us at ridiculous@howstuffworks.com. You can check out our new Facebook group, The Ridiculous Historians. You want to be a moderator? You like that kind of stuff? Shoot us an email at that aforementioned address, and we will look at your credentials and see if you've got the stuff.
We will go through your transcripts.
You probably do.
You probably do.
Just the desire is enough.
Well, if you're listening to this show, you have impeccable taste. And thank you so much for listening. It's pretty clear that the three of us find President Johnson a fascinating character. We'd like to hear some of your President Johnson trivia as well. We'd also like to thank Julia Layton, our regular contributor, who wrote an article about LBJ's phone usage for How Stuff Works. And of course, we can't say it enough, super producer Casey Pegram. I'm gonna lean back and make eye contact with him. Thank you. You're great.
That was a really tender moment you just had with Super Producer Casey. And just to throw out there, too, we call him Super Producer Casey, but what that entails is he edits the show. He also does all the cool sound design, any of the little bumpers and all that stuff. That's him. And, of course, he's a contributor vocally. We're going to try to twist his arm and make him do that a little more often, but we'll see how that shapes up.
Yeah, it's a foot in the door, a little bit at a time. He also gives us great life advice.
Oh, big time. He's like sort of a life coach / super producer. We'd also like to thank our composer, Alex Williams, who wrote our theme. And thank you again, Ben, for just being you and such a handsome devil you are.
Hey, thank you, Noel. You know what? Thanks to both of us for not going around peeing on people. Neither of us are perfect, but we'll always have that.
I think so.
So you can find us on Facebook. You can find us on Instagram. You can find us on Twitter. My trusted co-host has disclosed the email address. You can visit our website, RidiculousHistoryShow.com, and check out every episode we have ever done.
Hey, if you haven't already done it, do us a solid. If you like the show, write us a review on Apple Podcasts, something really nice and spiffy to make us feel good about ourselves and help that algorithm so people discover the show, because we like doing it and we want to keep doing it.
And stay tuned next time when Noel and I get into an eggnog riot.
Is that like a zoot suit riot?
You know, the backbeat's a little bit different. Or should I say a whisk? Do we use whisk with eggnog? I haven't nogged.
A little less saxophone, maybe?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, cool. Goodbye, everyone.